Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you've caught up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We're taping this on Wednesday, September 18th. I said it last week, but I really mean it this week. Football season is well underway. We got quarterback injuries in the NFL. We'll talk about that tomorrow. We also got a lot of moving parts. Big weekend coming up. And Travis, a successful weekend last weekend, I hear.
It seems like everybody had a big weekend, I think, with a lot of the weird matchups, unranked versus ranked. People took, you know, what they thought was going to happen, and there wasn't the crazy games
correct
to make them get the L. So it was a big victory for a lot of people.
Yeah, I haven't really talked to anyone who lost money on Saturday. So we're going to get with Mr. Executive Director John Murray of the Westgate about how the house did, and really look ahead to this coming weekend, some intriguing games. What about Georgia, Notre Dame, some other ranked matchups, and he's going to give us the plays that they've received at least the first few days of the week. And also Phil Steele. Obviously, Phil's been on the podcast several times here, and we're going to get his plays, talk through some of mine. I don't love this card, Travis. I don't love it. Last week, I had 8 plays on ESPN.com's chalk section picks column. I might have like 2 or 3.
What scares you the most?
Well, just nothing jumps out, and I don't want to force it. I really liked 8 last week, went 5 and 3, and I just, you know, you got to like, it's, there's something, there's the super contest in the Westgate and the NFL, and I just, it's not a true, well, there's a lot of contests that are not true indicators, and it's a great contest. It's like the World Series of Poker kind of thing, like the contest, but I just feel normal.
Sometimes you want to bet 8 games, next week you want
exactly
to bet 2.
And then sometimes small, sometimes big. Things like that. So you got to pick your spots. And I think I'm picking my spot to lay low, maybe jump in on some second halves. But it's also only Wednesday.
I'm just hoping Wisconsin pulls through.
You want whiskey?
Yeah.
As a Buckeye fan?
Yeah.
Because you hate Michigan.
I just want misery. Yes. Join the misery of others.
Well, I think if it doesn't happen in Camp Randall, you guys will be able to deliver it at the end of the season because you just have their number.
But it's hard to tell because, like, you'll talk about Michigan's coming off looking bad. So people are thinking highly right of Wisconsin. But you don't know what that really means.
Right, we've seen some insane line moves in that game. So let's get to it.
Stop. Hammer time.
That's the mating call for Phil Steele. Phil, how are you, my friend?
I am doing great, Doug. How about yourself?
Doing well. We got to break out the hammer for a couple games. I've done it a few times this year, been fairly fortunate, and we got to continue rolling along here. Now, I don't love this card. It was a bad card last week in terms of, you know, quality of games, we thought, no ranked matches, but I loved the card. I had 8 plays for what we do for ESPN.com's chalk section, but I, as much as I like the games in terms of as a fan this weekend, I don't really love a lot of games, so I need my handicapping therapist to help me get through some of this.
There you go. How'd you do on the 8 games, Doug?
5 and 3.
Nice.
4-0 in my straight the straight game weight. I got a little frisky with the first half lines, went 1 and 3 there. My favorite play, Phil, that I did not get to in time for what we had to submit for the website was a game you were on, and I applaud you. That was Louisville minus 10.
Yeah, that one worked out pretty well. It was good to see. I've been impressed with Louisville so far this year.
Let's crank out some plays. I know you got some, and I'm going to ask you some to where I'm leaning, and you can help me through it. So we'll start with Northwestern here. You're like the dog here, +9.5 at home against Sparty, a team that I liked for the season win total over. Obviously, losing at home as a double-digit favorite to Arizona State does not help that cause. But you like the Wildcats here catching the 9.5.
Yeah, a lot of great things here. And, you know, if you look at just strictly numbers, you'd favor Michigan State by a lot in this game because of their defense and the way they've been playing. But listen to these factors they got going on. First of all, Michigan State's not a great away favorite. They're just 3-10 the last 13 times they've been an away favorite. And if you follow Northwestern, it's an automatic. You play the underdog. You know, if you played just pure underdog in Northwestern games the last 2 years, Doug, you're 12-1-1 against the spread. And that lone loss was when Stanford caused a fumble with 20 seconds left in the game and fell on it in the end zone to win by 10, or else the underdog would be undefeated in Northwestern games. So you got to love that factor. You got to love the fact that Pat Fitzgerald, as a home underdog, is 4-1-1 against the spread his last 6. And then you're looking at a Michigan State offense that the last 10 games they have played against a Power 5 opponent, they are averaging a grand total of 13 points per game. Now, they're laying 9.5 on the road with an offense averaging 13 points per game against Power 5 opponents the last 10. If you figure this is going to be a low-scoring game, you've got Pat Fitzgerald at home. And another thing about this game that I like with Michigan or with Northwestern is the fact that Pat Fitzgerald does great in Big Ten play. How about this factor? Do you know that Northwestern is on a current run of 15-1 straight up in Big Ten regular season games, and over the last 4 years they've gone 26-9 straight up. So they do great in Pac-12 or Big Ten play. They're at home, and I'm surprised the number's over a touchdown. I'm taking the 9.5 with Northwestern. Game will be decided by a field goal. Upset wouldn't surprise me.
Northwestern is different, I think, this year than the previous years. I'm with you. Anybody who had Northwestern the points in the opener against Stanford, I sympathize with you. However, they had no business being in that game in the first place. Now, the last play with the cover, I get it. But they were relegated to a backup. They just look very slow and bad. Now, it's funny you mentioned that the underdogs cover. I was actually on UNLV as one of my plays last week, and I just got there. I just felt like the speed of the Rebels would be too much for Northwestern. I'm not sure Northwestern gets double-digit points here. I mean, granted, that's a lot of that's with the Sparty D that's only given up 34 points in three games. But I don't want to lay the 9.5 either. This will be a tricky game, but I wonder if we're being influenced too much by the past Northwestern teams that I think were much more competent than this year's Wildcat squad.
You got Patty Fisher is back. You got Joe Gaziani back. You got some star power in that defense. I got this game going 16-13, so I'm taking the 9.5. I think any points over a touchdown is well worth it. I do like this Northwestern defense.
Okay. Yeah, no, the defense is decent. Yeah, how about that? An over-under in college in 2019 at 39. Solid.
Makes sense.
But you have it at landing 29. That's awesome. You want to go to another dog here, and this is a team that I faded against UCLA earlier this season, and then I swore it off. And you're liking San Diego State plus the 4. I'm on the other side here. Why do you like the Aztecs?
Yeah, and I had San Diego State in that game against UCLA, and I'm a big Aztec fan. I'll go back to last year, Doug. San Diego State started out the year 6-1. They went on the road. They beat Boise State. They were having themselves a great season, and then injuries cropped up. And when I was going over the team with Coach Long this year, it definitely spoke of that, because every time we got to a position, he would be like, "Well, he's our best linebacker, but he missed the last five games last year. Well, he was our best defensive lineman, but he missed our last five games last year. Well, he was our best cover quarterback, but he missed our last five games last season." And what happened last year was a very atypical year for San Diego State. They usually dominate once they get to conference play. That banged-up team actually went 4-4 in the Mountain West last year, which is highly unusual. But this is a San Diego State team that the previous 6 years had been 40-10 straight up in Mountain West play. And how about this? 40-10 is a great record, but to me, 34-15-1 against the spread is an even better record. Normally, Rocky Long lays it low in non-conference play, gets to Mountain West, and that's when you see them playing their best ball. And now here they are, an underdog at home. Rocky Long's 5-0-1 against the spread as an underdog at home. And coming into the year, I thought San Diego State was a better team. I thought fully loaded, all their players back, they're the stronger team at home. I had them a favorite, and they've done nothing to disappoint me. That Weber State team that they only beat by 6 in the opener is one of the better FCS teams out there. And like I said, he usually lays low in these non-conference games. Now, Utah State last year spiked way up. They had been about a 5-6 win team. All of a sudden, they went 11 games last year. The offenses look great, but they haven't really taken on a defense like the 3-3-5 of San Diego State, which, by the way, is allowing just 248 yards and 8 points per game. Jordan Love is back, but they've got a young offensive line. It's just their second road trip, and I think San Diego State's a better team. They're at home. They're getting points over a field goal in this one. I'm taking San Diego State plus the points. This one I am calling for the outright upset.
Okay, we're going to learn a lot about this Aztecs team. We did it at UCLA at the Rose Bowl. Well done there in Pasadena, but this will be interesting to see if they can get it done here against Utah State. So let's turn the page to a little bit higher profile games. Utah at USC. My, how things have changed, Phil. The Trojans, home dogs, over a field goal, no less, to the Utah Utes. Well, obviously, Kyle Whittingham has built a program there with Utah. They were a sneaky, dark horse, chic pick, however you want to put it, to reach the college football playoff this year. And the Utes laying points, and you're laying it in L.A.
Yeah, and I have Utah as my number one surprise team in the country this year in the magazine. And last year, my number one surprise team, which is a non-top 10 team that I think can make a playoff, was Notre Dame. And they ended up getting to the playoff. So this is a big game for Utah. And I'll tell you this, Doug. Last year when we did this podcast together, I liked USC plus 6.5 on the road at Utah. And I jumped out to a 14-0 lead. That was thanks to a couple of turnovers. And then it was just a beatdown the rest of the game. I mean, Utah flat out dominated. They had a 27-10 first down edge against USC. USC even scored 2 fourth-quarter touchdowns, and Utah still had a 27-10 first down advantage. Total yardage domination. They ran the ball at will, passed the ball at will, and shut down USC's offense. Now, another thing I like here is the matchup. Last week we saw with Keaton Slovis. Slovis thrived against Stanford, but against BYU, he had some pressure and struggled a little bit. Well, Utah's got, in my mind, the best defensive line in the country. They're loaded up front, Sac Lake City. I think they get the pressure on Slovis, and they also have perhaps the premier cover corner in the country in Johnson. They've got themselves an outstanding free safety. They've got one of the better secondaries. So I think they match up extremely well with this pass-happy USC team with their talented receiving core and a freshman quarterback. And just the way Utah beat down USC last year, I think they can go on the road. I don't think it's going to be a truly hostile setting for the for USC at home. So I like Utah to go on the road and get this one.
So it's an interesting stat when you mentioned against their season average and then also the fact that a lot of teams open with cupcakes. How much stock do you put that, you know, given that we're only mid-September?
I do put that based on, you look at who the opponents played as an example. Utah held BYU to 85 yards below its season average. USC allowed that same BYU team 111 yards above its season average. They gave up 430 yards to that same BYU team. They gave up 299 yards passing. Utah played that same BYU team and only allowed 300 yards.
All right, good enough for me. Another big game, and really probably the biggest game, all things considered, is Michigan at Wisconsin. Now, this is interesting because the look-ahead line was about Wolverines minus 5.5 or 6 for most of the summer. But now, Whiskey Valentine, all you like, laying 3.5 to the Wolverines, who nearly lost to Army, have looked inept. I mean, inept at times on offense, but they do have a stout defense. And everybody I talk to in this industry, whether it be odds makers that are really sharp, handicappers that are really sharp, including yourself, all love or at least like the Wolverines.
Yeah, when you look at Wisconsin, I mean, you look at the numbers. They haven't allowed a point all season. Their offense has been dominant. They're averaging 5 yards per carry. They're completing 77% of their passes. But as you just touched on, you have to look at who they played. South Florida last year was the fakest team in the entire country. Yeah. Somehow they got to 7-0. They were barely beating weak teams, and they should have probably lost 4 of those games. When they played bowl teams, they got waxed down the stretch, and it's the same thing this year for South Florida. Central Michigan, the backup quarterback, the problems, and naturally they blew them out. This would be their first real test. And I watched Jack Cohn last year. He's a serviceable quarterback, but he struggled in some big games like at Penn State. I didn't really see him as a quarterback that's going to win a lot. Now, he's got a pretty good receiving core. But, you know, when I look at Michigan coming into the year, I had Michigan winning the Big Ten, and I know they haven't looked great so far this year. But to go back to the Middle Tennessee State game in the opener, I thought they were going to blow out Middle Tennessee. A couple of turnovers set up 2 short field touchdowns for Middle in the first half. Then they go on a roll, and then they gave up. They're up 40-14 in that game after giving up those 2 short field touchdowns. They gave up a 59-yard touchdown pass with 1:06 left in the game. So it was just one of those where they could easily have even shut out Middle Tennessee State. Didn't get it done. Offense wasn't overpowering, but they were a big favorite. And once again, against Army, we saw Oklahoma struggle against that same Army team last year. Needed an overtime win. Oklahoma ended up making the playoff. I go back to last year's game. Michigan just throttled Wisconsin in that one. They led it 38-7 at home. They overpowered them at the line of scrimmage. They had a 21-11 first down edge in the game and really controlled matters. Now they're going on the road. They're an underdog. I think you're going to see Michigan play its first A game of the season. And I'd like the Wolverines to go and get it on the road outright once again. And you're getting over a field goal in this one. They'd have to lose the game by more than a field goal for you not to cover.
You know, it's interesting with this Michigan team. They've peaked early in previous seasons and then fizzled. Maybe it's better. Maybe it's better that they stumble out of the gates and this is when they hit a groove. Like you said, you're getting their A game. Wisconsin's always struggled with the spread offense. And it is interesting how different that Army game would have played out if that scoop and score is not blown dead by a bad call because they end up turning the ball over. And it's 14-7 Wolverines in the first half. They might have covered the first half line and then rolled from there. You never know how these games play out. I'm not making excuses for them because that was inexcusable, the fact that they almost lost. But I just wonder what the perception of the Wolverines would be had that whistle not been blown. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah, we need Shea Patterson to not fumble the football. Yeah. That's what we need
here. At some point, he's going to get pulled. I mean, I would maybe already done it. Okay, one more game for you, and then we'll rip through some of mine. North Carolina -3 here with App State.
And, you know, it's a different App State team. They have a different head coach this year. You talked about Satterfield before, the job he's doing at Louisville. I don't think that this year's App State team is the same quality. I go through the play-by-play of every game. The Eastern Tennessee State game, I wasn't overwhelmed with. They didn't completely dominate that, even though they won 42-7. And the Charlotte game, you go back, and it's anybody's game late in the first half. They got like two scores in the last 2 minutes of the first half. They ended up winning the game by 15, but Charlotte actually outgained them 526-458. So I don't think we're dealing with the same App State team that we have in the past. They're sort of living off the reputation a little bit. And North Carolina is going to take these guys seriously. Normally, when you play a group of five team, you are a large favorite. North Carolina is only a 3-point favorite in this game. I have been impressed with what I've seen out of North Carolina. Now, granted, a lot of it has been late in the games. They were down to South Carolina, down to Miami, and Wake Forest they were down and rallied for the comeback. But I like the way Sam Howell's throwing the football. He's got 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. They've got the running backs. When I talked to Coach Brown in the preseason going over the team, the strength of this team's a running back. They've got Williams, Carter, Williams. They're loaded at that area. And I think they will be able to run the football in an App State team that gave up 5.8 yards per carry against Charlotte in their last game. So it's not the same dynamic App State team we've had in the past. North Carolina comes into this one fully warned. They're off a loss at home. I like North Carolina. You're only laying 3. The line is extremely cheap here. I think we're going to see North Carolina win this one, be their first comfortable win of the season.
You know, UNC had a really tough spot last week. I think it was like just the third team or something ever to be an underdog in all three of its first games and try to go 3-0. It's just really tough to pull off. You mentioned the comeback against South Carolina, then Miami, they converted a 4th and long and then a touchdown, and it was a tough spot, and they rallied back with Wake Forest. They have, you know, it's 8 days now between games. Look, I was on UNC under for season wins. Now, with that being said, it's a loser, but it's a tough spot. I would probably lean there as well, but I think you got to throw out last week to a certain extent. That was a really tough spot for the Tar Heels. So I can see where you're going with that one. I want to talk about two favorites I like. And one of these games really confuses me. I'm surprised Texas is not laying more to Okie State. Okie State, I was on them last week, got lucky with the you know, garbage touchdown. That was a bad beat on Tulsa. I just think this defense is really weak, and the offense is kind of limited at times. It's explosive against bad teams, but Texas laying 5.5 is not a lot with an over-under of 73.
Yeah, and I'm going to agree with you there. I like Texas. As you mentioned, Oklahoma State, probably their biggest weakness is going to be their front seven on defense. They've got an extremely young defensive line. Now, it hasn't showed so far this year because they're not giving up huge amounts of yards on the ground, but they've only played Oregon State, McNeese, and Tulsa. And as you touched on, if you had Tulsa last week, Tulsa led that thing 21-20 at the half, appeared in control, and then Oklahoma State got that late run for a touchdown to pull away and win by 19, but haven't really been tested so far this year. Texas has been tested. I like what I saw in the LSU game. The running back corps should be getting a little bit healthier. Ellinger gives them a large edge at quarterback. I like Spencer Sanders, but he is a freshman, and he really hasn't played in a big game like this. They've been big favorites in all three games, so we'll see the true Spencer Sanders here, maybe. And I think Texas is better. I know the other thing about Texas, and I want you to watch this as the season goes on, Doug, they have a very talented defense. It was a very inexperienced defense coming in the year, but they have a lot of talent. I think we're going to see Texas's defense get better and better each week this season. And by the end of the year, they're going to have a pretty good defense. You're not going to see any more of those 573 yards against an excellent LSU offense. So I'm 100% your corner on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think LSU's really, really, really good. And Texas hung with them. I'm surprised this line's not over a touchdown. I would lay five-ish like at Stillwater. Like, the fact that it's at Austin, and it just feels cheap. Another game that doesn't feel necessarily cheap, but I have to do it. I'll probably get burned, but I'm still going to do it. And I'm laying the 10.5 with Oregon on the farm. Stanford is, maybe I'm chasing money that I'm kicking myself for not laying UCF last week, and I'm trying to chase money, FOMO, a little FOMO disease here. But Oregon, given what happened last year, and given what happened in the opener, I think this Oregon team is a little under the radar here. I think they could open up a can here against Stanford that just does not have the firepower anymore.
Yeah, and you look at handicapping-wise, you'd have to say, wow, you got to take David Shaw as an underdog off two big losses at home. It's a do-or-die situation. But as you touched on, you go back to last year's game, when these two played, and Oregon basically won the game. They were up 24-7. Red scores a touchdown to make it 31-7. They mark them down at the foot line. They fumble on the next play. Stanford returns it 99 yards for a touchdown or 80 yards for a touchdown. And then later, running out the clock, they fumble again, and Stanford's able to get a gift field goal to force overtime and pull it out there. So you know if Oregon gets the lead, they're not going to let up. And Stanford played a team like that last week. You know, with UCF, they wanted to win and win big, and they did not let up on Stanford last week, and nor did they have to. Stanford's pass defense is really struggling, which is a surprise because they've got some players back there in the secondary, but they've given up 347 yards passing the last 2 weeks, and both of those to inexperienced QBs. Now they're taking on Justin Herbert, who very well could be the first quarterback taken in the draft. So this is an Oregon team that's got my number one rated offensive line in the country. They've got a vastly improved defense, getting Thibodeau up front, added in with what they had up front already, makes them pretty strong. So add it all up, I would have to lean with Oregon in this one. It's scary because Stanford is the home dog in the situation, but yeah, talent-wise, I see where you're going in that one.
Exactly. In this day and age with this, and a team like Oregon, you can't be afraid to lay 10.5 on the road. I mean, they could put up 60. No, they won't. They could put up 50 here with Stanford, but I'm not too worried. David Shaw, I don't think, has the horses this year. That's just where I'm leaning there, and I'm likely going to have to enter that. One dog I like, and I want to ask your opinion, how bad is Louisiana Monroe?
Well, they gave Florida State a game, and coming into the year, I wasn't that wild about ULM, but Caleb Evans is a quarterback that has got solid potential. He's got three touchdowns. He's like I think it's his fifth year, it seems like he's starting. He's been there forever. He is hitting 67% of his passes. Now, if they have a problem, it's rush defense. They're giving up 5.3 yards per carry, but you talk about a flat spot
that's
for Iowa State.
It is the classic flat spot.
They're coming off of an overtime game against Iowa, and they've got Baylor on deck, which is a massive game. It's their first Big 12 game. They feel they're a Big 12 contender. Baylor feels they're a Big 12 contender. That's going to really determine a lot. How do you get motivated for ULM? And ULM just seems to catch teams in this situation. Remember last year they caught A&M between Clemson and Alabama. And I think at the end of the year 2 years ago they caught Florida State in a huge sandwich game also. And they came up short in that A&M game despite the fact they were actually in it at the half, had the yardage edge at the half. So they're going to come in prepared. I would lean with the dog in that one based purely on situation, says you screams ULM. The rush defense would concern me because Iowa State's got to get that run game going. But they have been struggling running the football. They only had 91 yards running against Iowa. Granted, Iowa's got a pretty good defense.
Yes, and by the way, that just quick clarification, the Iowa State game, the Cy-Hawk game went forever all day, but that was weather delays. Did not quite go to OT, but it came down to the wire. Big rivalry game. So, yeah, and you're catching 18.5. So I'm leaning to the Warhawks there. I'm also leaning over in the Charlotte-Clemson game. Charlotte was one of my plays last week. Now they're playing UMass, which is probably the worst team in college football, if not definitely top five. I think the over here I know Clemson's got this all-star defense, but the spread's 41, and it's 62.5 is the total. I mean, you're looking at like 11 points from Charlotte. I think with that offense, I think you're looking good to the over there, and it's a flat spot for Clemson, if you will.
Yeah, and Charlotte actually goes from facing the worst team in college football to facing the best team in college football. So I don't know how many times that happens. But you go back to that App State game 2 weeks ago. They put up 526 yards on App State. Reynolds is hitting 67% of his passes. He's got 7 touchdowns, just 2 interceptions. And they've got some running backs. Remember, Benny LeMay is a guy that last year ran for over 1,200 yards. And this year he's already got 351 yards. He's averaging 7.6 yards per carry. Fingers averaging 8.6. And the thing with Clemson is they like to play all their players, and this would be a game for that. So it gets to be the fourth quarter. Clemson's going to play every single player on that bench, and that opens up the back door for Charlotte to score late in the game had they not. And on the flip side of the coin, Clemson could score on anybody in the country. So I would lean with the over in that one as well.
Yeah, no, it could be like that New Mexico State game where New Mexico State shut out in the first half and then gets 10 points in the second half. I'm talking the out with Alabama. So. All right, my man. Always good catching up, Phil. And let's root at home for some winners this weekend.
Sounds great, Doug. Always enjoy our conversations, my friend. Good luck to you this weekend.
Right, you too. Take care.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks to Phil Steele. Good to get him on and get his wisdom and all that thorough research and analysis. Mr. Director, John Murray from the Westgate is going to come up momentarily.
Kicking is for losers.
Dear Lord. I could not believe what I was seeing. In fact, it didn't even cross my mind that Pat Narduzzi would kick a field goal. And then, after like a tight shot, they show the fourth down lineup, and it's a kicker out there. I'm like, this can't be right. I had to double check the score, Mr. Murray, to realize it was a 7-point game. This, no joke, is a fireable offense.
Oh, it definitely is, and I actually think the post-game press conference, what he said post-game, was equally bad as the kick itself. He said the reason why he did it was because he needed 2 scores to win the game. I don't even know how it's possible that a guy that's in a position like that, making as much money as he's making, could make a mistake like that and then justify it.
He tripled down on it on Monday or Tuesday's press conference, and I just went blasted on Twitter. It's
unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. It is so ridiculous. Now, on Sunday, there's something called the War Room, which you may or may not have heard of. A lot of the people that you see on TV, the ex-players, the ex-coaches gather and watch games on Sunday, NFL Sundays. And Chris Berman's there as well. Tom Jackson was this week, which was awesome to see. And there's a lot of other people behind the scenes, too. And I get to sneak in there and get a seat at the table on the way corner. So I chatted with a few, just let's call them former coaches. I was like, okay. I'm still fuming. It's Sunday morning, less than 24 hours since this ridiculous.
Hold on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Why were you fuming? Just because how stupid it was?
Yeah. I mean, it's less than 24 hours later, and I'm still flabbergasted.
You're still fuming, huh? And, there's still heat coming off your head there?
Look, I had the points. I laid the points in the first half. So, like, I had no action.
Oh, okay.
I had no action. Yeah. And look, you've coined kicking is for losers. I've been yelling with guys like Trevor Maddich when I did College Game Day Radio 5 years. Like, I've been passionate about this stuff, and which is why we connect. I think you and I used to talk about this all the time back in the day. It's very simple.
I don't want that much credit. I don't want that much credit for it because I mean anyone that follows, like anybody that really follows football, has known this for years. I shouldn't get
right. Anyone who's played video games as a toddler,
right? This is not something that like I came up with. I'm not exactly like reinventing the wheel here. No. Obviously, you shouldn't be kicking a field goal down by 7 on 4th and goal at the 1-yard line
with 4.5 minutes to go.
Yeah, you don't need to have any sense at all to know that. I mean, this is like day one stuff. You just said it perfectly, but like no 9-year-old playing Madden with his brother would ever do anything that stupid.
Yeah. But they'll make fun of analytic. They'll like do all these stupid low hanging fruit jokes like, oh, the computer, the game wasn't played on a computer. It's like, no, you moron. Like, it's about the scoreboard. It's not about like the technique on a tackle. And
of course.
Anyway, so I explained to, let's just say, some former coaches and players. I won't name names.
Yeah.
And they were like, he did what? Because they're all NFL guys. They're like, are you kidding me? So
Nobody would think, even the most like old school guy, like all the like, I feel like all the announcers are old school. They're always like advocating for a punt or a field goal. in all these situations where you and I would definitely go for it, but nobody would defend that decision. Pat Narduzzi just raised the bar for kicking is for losers. It's at a new level, and it's hard to picture anyone topping that.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's worse than the Monday Nighter down 15 with 8.5 to go.
It's worse. I think it's worse than Vance Joseph's field goal down 4 against the against Cleveland last year on like a Thursday night game, something like that. I thought that was number one, and then Narduzzi goes, he re-raises it. Let's see who can top it now. I mean, we still got 12 weeks left of college football, 11 weeks left of college football.
I mean, it's somewhat defensible if he had like three timeouts and the margin was 6. The fact that it's 7 and he has one timeout.
Yeah, 7. Right.
Is really indefensible. If I were the AD,
I would have ripped it. I would have ripped it anyway, even if it was 6.
All his reasoning, like, well, I trust my defense to get the ball back. All right, if you trust him so much, trust him to leave him on the 1, you moron.
Right. Like, maybe if it was 4th and goal at, like, the 25-yard line. I don't know.
Right, I mean, that's what I tweeted.
Fourth and goal at the 1-yard line.
4th and goal
on
the 10, I still would have gone for it.
I would have, too. But you could have at least made a case because that would have been a low-percentage play. 4th and goal at the 1-yard line. It's not even a question. You don't even think about it. If I was the kicker, I would have been sitting on the bench with my helmet off, not even like worrying about, oh, there's no chance I'm going in.
And then he talked about execution on plays, you know, downs 1 through 3. And my whole thing is you have to know it's 4-down territory when you're calling a play on first down. Like, you have to know that it's a 4-down sort of sequence.
Sure.
You can't make, you don't call a play in a vacuum on first down. You have to know what you're doing. Like, for example, there was I forget the game. It was like, I think it was like third and 2 at their opponent's 43-yard line. I would have just run it twice because I know it's 4-down territory. You can't. Anyways, he just doubled down, tripled down. So if I were an AD, I'd sit him down and ask him like 4 questions, and if he failed them all, I'd fire him.
And that's another reason why I've advocated for not punting at all, because then think about how much that would open up your playbook if you knew you always had 4 downs to work with. If you started on first down knowing you've got 4 plays to work with, I think that would give you a lot more options in your playbook.
And what's funny is at some point this is going to happen. Like, there is going to
be,
we're already seeing evolution, and it just comes back to the Kate Fagan, this is the hostage sort of rationale.
These coaches, I love that. One of the smartest things I've ever heard.
These coaches are at gunpoint, and they're told in the early, 4 minutes to go to get in the van, and they get in the van to extend their life, but they're not assessing the optimality of surviving the whole situation.
Definitely not.
All right, my man. Well, I imagine what's that?
I was going to say, I wanted to pivot to the first sharp play because I think you're going to love it.
Well, I was going to first. It is Pitt. Okay, I'm all ears.
It's Pitt plus 12.5 against Central Florida. I don't know. I don't know that I can back this one.
No.
After seeing what Pat Narduzzi and Central Florida is just a buzzsaw right now. I mean, they're now. I heard somebody was saying over the weekend, like, oh, they just got done beating up a powerhouse in Stanford. This shows that they deserve in the college football playoff. Hold on a second. Stanford is not a powerhouse at all. They're nothing but a power, anything but a powerhouse, but certainly a very impressive win there for Central Florida.
Yeah, no, I was talking about Phil Steele earlier in the podcast. I'm kicking myself. I have FOMO for not taking Central Florida. That was the one team I really wanted to. I thought about the last thing. I did not, though. But I imagine you guys took a beating last weekend, right?
Saturday was definitely a bad day for us here at the book. We lost a few early games, didn't go our way, and then we certainly got beat up pretty badly on that Oklahoma game. There was also one of our house players hit a big baseball parlay that same day. I can't even remember what the teams were. So you got to remember, there's a lot of different things at play. I mean, I think that one of the first Saturdays of college football, the Dodgers lost a night game as a huge favorite, and it really helped swing our day. So. And like, because every parlay had the Dodgers in it, so there's a lot of different factors at play when you look at a day like that, and you can't only look at the college football games and think that's what the whole day is going to be about. But yeah, certainly Saturday was definitely not good for us. I'm trying to think of what it was. Oh, Kansas State. Everybody was on Kansas State in the morning, and they actually won outright at Mississippi State. That Mississippi State coach is awful, by the way. And that really hurt us early in the day on Saturday.
That's interesting that the baseball becomes a factor. I haven't talked to a single person who lost on Saturday. Travis and I were talking about just like everyone we know won money on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a factor. I'm not saying it's a big factor, but you don't want to just completely forget about that. I mean, in the past, usually on Mexican Independence Weekend, which was this past weekend, there's been a very high-profile boxing fight, whether it was Canelo Alvarez, Triple G, the last few years, or previous to that, Floyd Mayweather. So there's other events that are going on, even as college football is the focus. And this Saturday, baseball, this past Saturday, baseball factored in for us in a negative way.
All right, so the Panthers... plus 12. You got, every half point matters because you just don't know what number is going to land in their games because you can't. Sure. You can't. There's no such thing as a key number anymore in a Pat Narduzzi game.
Yeah. He could kick a field goal in any scenario at this point. So yeah, you want to make sure you get every half point that's available to you.
Not to be confused with offensive wizard and game technician Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, and isn't it funny? Like, I know we're going to do NFL tomorrow, but isn't it funny? Like, of all the coaches in the NFL that would be super conservative inside the 5-10-yard line, it's like the young, hotshot offensive wizard that was a head coach at a Big 12 school, and he's the guy that's kicking field goals at the 2-yard line?
Five field goals inside the five in two games. It's amazing.
That's just, of all the coaches in the NFL, I would have think he would have been in the bottom three of least likely, along with Sean McVay, maybe Bill Belichick, Sean Payton. I mean, he's like one of the last guys I ever would have thought would be doing that.
It is surprising. So, you've been Mr. Michigan for the last couple of years. Are you grabbing the points?
Unfortunately for me.
Are you grabbing the points here?
I've always backed Coach Harbaugh. You know that. Yes. Coach Harbaugh. And I can tell you guys, we've already seen sharp money come in the other way. Wisconsin's group laid -3 with Wisconsin. Push that number up a little bit. We're at Wisconsin -3.5 right now. And it looks like the huge majority of the tickets are on that game are on the Badgers. And now it's early. It's Wednesday morning. I say that every week, but it's so important to remember. We're going to need Michigan is the way it's shaping up right now. I would imagine there is going to be some Michigan money line takers on Friday night and Saturday. But the way it's setting up right now, we definitely are going to need the Wolverines. And we always talk about how people bet on what they just saw. And there's been nothing. Michigan's shown nothing this year that would make anyone think they're in for a good season. And I think that's why we're seeing all this money come in against them.
This was the game last year, Mr. Executive Director, where I went on SportsCenter, explained what reverse line movement was.
Yeah, I remember that one. And wasn't it the game, too?
You set the bat signal.
Wasn't it the game? Yeah, I remember that game very well. And I think there was like a critical penalty on the long snapper or something. And the guy had a really funny name. The guy had a funny name, too. Do you remember that?
I was actually not watching it. I was at a birthday party of my college roommate in New York. And
I don't believe that. I got to believe that you were following on your phone or something.
Well, I was watching some of the game in the drive, but it was a night game, and the birthday parties on Saturdays tend to be a night as well.
Sure. Okay, I believe it. But yeah,
I was
really happy
with your bat signal when I was checking the box score. Let's put it that way.
Hey, those bat signal plays haven't been great yet. I mean, A&M was clearly the quote square dog of 2 weeks ago at Clemson. And then I don't want to say it was a square dog, but we had a lot of money on Kansas State here against Mississippi State last week. That was a very strangely one-sided ticket count there for an underdog.
Well, I've been very reluctant. I've get a few tweets on Saturday. Has Mr. Director sent out the bat signal yet?
And, well, you don't want to force stuff out.
Correct.
You know, you don't want to just say every time I see a little bit of a – like the ticket count on Sunday was pretty – lopsided in the Vikings direction, but not so much that I wanted to like that one you just referenced, that Michigan Wisconsin game, that was so one-sided and the line was moving the other way.
I think that's the key.
That's a special one there. Definitely. That's when you know it's the real deal. Everybody's piling in on the dog and the line is going up anyway. That's when you want to get involved there, because over the years that's been very effective.
Well, Alfred, I take my responsibility very seriously, so
sure.
I know how to decipher the bat signal. So,
oh, I know you do.
I've been very disciplined in that regard. What other sharp action have you guys gotten? I'm surprised by whiskey, because all the sharps and odds makers I really respect and know, they're all on Michigan. So it's actually comforting to hear whiskey from certain respected groups behind your counter.
How about this game? Friday night, we've really got pretty good games Friday night, which should be fun. Group took USC. They took +4. They're at home against Utah. Utah off to a very good start. They were everybody's trendy pick to win the Pac-12, win the Pac-12 South. I'm a little surprised by how high this line is and how high it opened. I thought it would be more like on the other side of three, maybe Utah -2, 2.5. And this group agreed with me. They took the Trojans and 4 points. Now, this is another one where this is going to be a one-sided ticket count, and it's already shaping up. We're already like 4-1 tickets on the Utes. We're going to need the Trojans pretty big in this game Friday, and so far we've seen a little bit of sharp money come in on that side, on that USC side.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't trust Clay Helton.
No, me neither. I don't, to say the least, I don't think anything of Clay Helton. But Slovis, I think, has been better than we thought. And BYU is a pretty solid team. We don't want to dismiss USC because of that loss to BYU. They're a pretty solid team. I always thought that BYU-Utah score from that opening Thursday was very misleading. Utah had two defensive touchdowns in that game. That final score was a lot wider than I think the game really was.
How's this for a little cherry on top with Clay Helton? He is 2-11 ATS as an underdog, which that percentage is 15.4. That is dead last of 553 coaches over the last 40 years, minimum 10 games as a dog.
The anti-Tom Herman.
Yeah.
never covers as an underdog.
There's something to be said. I know it's only 13 games, but it just shows that like those close, you know, he's not outperforming against strong competition.
I don't think Clay Helton's outperforming anything, and I never understood how he kept his job after last year. I definitely, you know, unless things really go well here down the stretch for USC, you got to think he'll be replaced and they'll bring in somebody else next season.
You would think. I mean, someone explained to me like continuity and things like that. And you know what? He did go out and get Graham Harrell and all that. So I think he's done some things. Well, it'll be interesting to see how the season finishes because he obviously is a well-respected individual, incredible person in that regard. So,
sure.
All right. What else you got?
Let's go to Saturday. This is one where actually the money has moved, or the number has moved against the play from the guy that we respect here. The guy took Rutgers plus 7.5, and now Boston College is up to an 8-point favorite. So possible we could be looking at a head fake play there on Rutgers, and it could be a good time to get in on Boston College. Boston College coming off of a disastrous loss at home to Kansas last night. I think that was last Friday night. So you would think, you know, we looked at last week, Maryland and Colorado were two teams that seemed to be really overvalued because of their 2-0 starts, and we saw both of those teams lose and fail to cover the spread. Right now, this could be a good time to get in on BC. The money actually came in on Rutgers, but the line has moved up. So keep an eye on that game. That's one of the 9 a.m. Pacific kickoffs on Saturday morning.
Oh, I'm keeping an eye on it for sure.
Oh, I know you are. I know you're keeping an eye on every game. I'm not worried about you. I'm thinking more about the general listener out there.
No, I'm teasing. Yeah, that was ridiculous. I was like, you know, I sat there looking at the halftime. I'm like, I think Kansas is the right side in the second half. It just looked like one team was dead.
Yeah, we took some big money on BC in that game. BC money line, BC minus the points. I mean, one of the things that really saved us this past week was we had a bad Saturday, like I mentioned, but we did so well on Thursday with the Buccaneers winning outright at Carolina, and then we did so well Friday, mainly because of that Boston College game, that we had a really good head start on the overall weekend from the weekdays, and then it helped us stomach the losses a little bit more on Saturday.
Copy. All right, man, we got to let you go. What else you got?
Yeah, I'll give you two more. We saw some money come in. There's another 9 a.m. game. Cal, they took 2.5. They're on the road against Ole Miss. And how about this one? The late game catch-up, the end of the night, the Chase game, 7:30 local time here. This group took minus 3.5 on Utah State. They're on the road at San Diego State. San Diego State off to a terrible start this year. And this group, sharp group, laid 3.5 points on the road favorite there.
Yeah, I talked with Phil Steele about it. He's on the Aztecs there, and I just can't get behind him. But, you know, somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose on that game. Simple as that.
And then I'll give you just one more, not really a sharp play, but everyone so far, at least, is on Georgia. The big game Saturday, Notre Dame at Georgia. That should be a fun game. Everybody seems to be on the Bulldogs. We've gone up from 13.5 to 14. I'm not calling it a sharp play. I'm just saying that so far we're seeing mostly money on the favorite there.
So the public's
so far. Yeah. And that'll be the most bet game of the week. And I have to think by kickoff we'll need Notre Dame pretty big. But I don't expect it to be nearly as one-sided as the Oklahoma-UCLA game.
How many times you said that you're going to need Notre Dame?
Not too many, but you know, certainly it's commonplace when you have these primetime, really high-profile primetime games. You're going to need the dog to cover a few of these. And 2 weeks in a row, we had the favorite actually cover. We had LSU cover at Texas 2 weeks ago, and then obviously Oklahoma dismantling UCLA this past Saturday. So we need to get a dog in there one of these weeks.
Ah, the house rooting for the Irish. That'll be fun. All right, Mr. Director.
Always rooting for the underdog, DK.
Yes, you do. Okay, bud. Well, we'll talk tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll have some more kicking stories.
All right, man.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Oh, it never gets old with Mr. Bob Lee. El Jefe, the general. What a stud that guy is.
I want his life.
Living on here on the Behind the Bets podcast. So thanks to him. Thanks to John Murray. Thanks to Phil Steele. And thanks to you, Travis. Always good to be on in the cockpit with you here. So I'm going to get my plays. They'll post Thursday for ESPN.com's chalk section. Phil, Connolly, Preston, a lot of us will have plays there. And I got to sort mine out.
Yeah, you got some time.
Yeah.
See if you
got to work
out.
Through it. Work through it here. But I do know I like those two favorites. I like Texas, and I also like Oregon at Stanford. All right, thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with the NFL version podcast and talk to Mr. Murray, and then also recap a little baby bankroll bonanza.